Good evening, everybody. This is James McCanny with my Science Hour for April 29, 2021. And tonight I'm going to be talking about positive feedback. And so anyway, this is related to helping out the Earth. This is still Earth Month. Earth Day, etc., has, I believe, gone by. But the point is that we are certainly have some serious problems on planet Earth, with overuse of resources, etc. But is there a way to deal with some of this? And positive feedback is a term I used it last week. I didn't really go into it a lot, but this week I'll be talking about it further. And so just as a kind of a primer, let me talk about electronic circuitry. Now, in a kind of go into what are known as operational amplifiers, something that most of you probably don't have any experience with, so I'll explain this. You take an amplifier. Now, what does an amplifier do? It takes the signal that you're putting in, and it amplifies it. So what happens if you have an amplifier, and then you take the output of that amplifier, and you put it back in to the input of the amplifier? And given that you have, now typically what you have is a electronic device, and it takes power to run this. So coming in also from the side is another set of wires which are powering this device. And it might be thought of, for example, your heart works on a similar basis, where your heart, what does it do? Its main objective, it's a muscle, it's an amplifier, just like an electrical circuit. What does it do? It takes blood that's coming in from one side, and the blood comes into the muscle, which is the heart, and then it squeezes down and it squeezes it out the other side, basically. And so it's an amplifier. But what would happen if you took the blood vessels coming out from the heart and put them into the heart, and you just kept pumping and pumping and putting up pressure, so you'd have much more pressure on the outbound side, and then that pressure goes back into the input, and then you would increase it again, and then that pressure would go back into the input of the heart, and you would increase it again the next time the heart pumped. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this would not be a very good system, because there's no loss of pressure on the return path in this simple little circuit that we made out of, your heart and blood vessel system. So something would have to give, and pretty soon your blood vessels would expand and expand until they just exploded. So positive feedback, in a sense, that's a very good term, analogy for positive feedback. But imagine you had an electric circuit, and you have an amplifier, and on the side of the amplifier is another power source, which powers the amplifier. You don't get something for nothing. The energy has to come from someplace. And say this is a transistor amplifier, or in the old days, an old tube, which probably most of you have never seen. But anyway, the energy is going back in, is being driven, the amplifier is being driven by a power source. So you have an electrical signal come into the amplifier amplifies it, the signal comes out of the amplifier, the voltage, the power, the current, everything amplified. Now you take that wire and you put it back into the input of the amplifier. Well, it's not going to take long until this amplifier is going to just basically burn itself up, because it's called positive feedback. So what do? You have another, it's called a negative feedback, and it's a way of controlling this amplifier. So what you do is you make sure that the output of the amplifier then is fed back to the input, but in a very controlled manner. Because if you let the signal die coming into the input, if you let that signal die off, then the amplifier won't do anything. So that's kind of the opposite effect. And so so that's called negative feedback, and it's a term that's in a principle that's used in what are known as operational amplifiers. This is back in the old days. Now, they're not used much anymore because now everything is digital. But back in the early days of electronics, the computers were analytic. They were analog computers, and they worked on the basis of positive and negative feedback to do things like multiplication, addition, division, etc. And the results were not always that good, and the results were many times skewed by the more you used one of these circuits with a certain amount of error in it, that error then fed back into the system and caused greater error as time went on. So at any rate, everything has gone to digital now, meaning it's stored in bits, zeros and ones, and all the calculations are done, etc. There are still bit rounding errors and overall rounding errors because of the number of bits you have in a number. But let me just get back to this idea of an operational amplifier and positive feedback. So what happens if you have a, let's say, a biological system, and it's got a problem? The input is being diminished with time. So there's some kind of like a amplifying process, but the input is being diminished continually by something else. And so the output of this amplifier keeps being diminished and diminished with time. The output then is going to go down, and eventually this system is going to die off. Now let me take this example and then translate it. Let's talk about the Amazon jungle. We can no longer talk about the big forests up in the, say, the Northern Hemisphere in the United States, etc. You can talk a little bit about them in Canada, but these have been all logged off. The rainforests, the Pacific rainforests, etc., have all been logged off, primary logging. They're now into the third and fourth generation of logging, trees, etc. But the rainforest concept still applies there somewhat. There are still rainforests. For example, the Black Forest in Europe used to be a rainforest because it was so dense that it absorbed all the sunlight. All of the sunlight was turned then into wood, etc., and it did not create a lot of heat. In other words, the sunlight was absorbed, so clouds could easily form above it and rain. And this is the reason you don't cut down a rainforest, because then the heat forms, there's nothing to absorb that sunlight. The heat rises, it prevents the clouds from forming, and it doesn't rain anymore. So you don't cut down the Amazon jungle is one of the main issues here. Okay, so anyway, what we're talking about here is the climate change concept. And so people are worried about the issue of carbon dioxide. And it was very interesting. I'll just insert something here. Elon Musk just launched his Carbon XPRIZE. Now, as you probably remember, I'm a alumni of the XPRIZE Foundation. I'm a XPRIZE winner. I won the 2018 Technology Innovation Achievement Award from XPRIZE for my wing generator running the water from the atmosphere machines. And the concept there was to take 2,000 liters of water out of the air for a price of less than 2 cents per liter any place in the world from renewable energy. Okay, so anyway, another prize that was created as an aside prize for the Water Abundance X Prize, which I was a finalist in. So anyway, the end result here is that I have some association with X Prize now, more than some. I'm an alumnus. And so when Elon Musk sat down with Peter Diamandis, the founder of X Prize, and I was going to post a picture of Peter and myself at the XPRIZE ceremony, But I have other things going on right now, and so my webpage is under development for the new WordPress page, which is going live right now. So there's some other issues with just the webpage. But it be that as it may, Peter was introducing Elon Musk and the new XPRIZE, $100 million carbon XPRIZE. And it was very interesting to see Elon Musk's take on this. He said he's in the middle. He's not an extremist on one side or the other. But he said what's going on when the because the Earth is heating up, which it is. I mean, it is because we're coming out of an ice age. But what happens is there's a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide that's locked into the permafrost in Russia, etc. And there's also a lot of carbon dioxide that's in the ocean. A lot of the carbon dioxide that we produce when we burn things like coal, etc., actually goes into the ocean. So it somewhat changes the chemistry, but it was, I'm not going to repeat everything that Musk said, but it was very interesting because Musk is a very good scientist. I would consider him on a par with top scientists. I know I'm considered in public, one of the top tier one scientists possibly on the planet, because I understand how things work. I'm not involved in politics. I don't go with the trendy things because my paycheck depends on it or something, because I don't have a paycheck. I don't work for government agencies. And Musk is very similar, except the big difference between him and me is he's a billionaire and I'm not. So that's one big difference. But Musk is a very good scientist. When he talks about space travel, when he talks about vision, when he talks about AI, which I criticized him before, but he's very much in terms of artificial intelligence, wants it to be used with rational thought and not just completely thrown out there and everybody becomes a subject to artificial intelligence. So I was very impressed with that, and I was very impressed with his discussion of the issue of climate change. So you should go listen to that, because I've been one of the people that demonstrably denounces this rush to, you know, change everything in the world because of climate change. And the whole idea of CO2 and Carl Sagan and the greenhouse effect and everything else. So anyway, I'm not going to go into that. But anyway, this prize has launched. And so I'm going to enter it with my own very uniquely McCanny type of approach to solving this issue. But what Musk was saying was very interestingly that it's not only carbon dioxide, but there are other things like methane that are in the atmosphere that really are going to be problems someday. Like a lot of methane. In fact, they have fires, they have explosions as the tundra in Russia is starting to thaw. There's big explosions that occur when there's a pocket of methane that's underneath the ground, and then, say, a lightning bolt hits, and boom, this thing explodes, and it creates a crater in the ground. And if that methane thaws, that cavity thaws enough, then that methane is going to escape into the atmosphere. It's not only a greenhouse gas, which I've talked about that before. The greenhouse concept is really incorrect, because a greenhouse has a glass ceiling that holds the air from circulating. On Earth, we create a tremendous amount more heat by just the burning process itself. 75% to 80% of the heat goes into the atmosphere right now. You don't have to wait for a greenhouse effect to have atmospheric heating from what, you know, burning the coal, natural gas, etc., because that's direct heating of the atmosphere. And every day the Earth releases that into outer space because of the upwelling of the heat that's created. It goes up, it eventually gets up to the upper atmosphere, and the Earth relieves itself of this every day, literally every day, vast amounts. Way more than ever would be created by a greenhouse effect. But the end result is that there's cause to believe that if the amount of CO2 got to be 2 to 3 to 4 times what it is today, then we should be looking at commercial viable processes to get this out of the atmosphere and do something with it to pack it away so it doesn't come back into the atmosphere. So anyway, the reason I'm talking about this, now there's a lot of people that are going to come into this prize and they're going to invent or take a process that takes carbon dioxide immediately out of the air. And that would be one effect. But let's understand something. If you do that, now there's going to be less carbon dioxide for plants to grow. So let's look back at the Amazon jungle. And this is going to get into my discussion of positive feedback. Okay, now if you had, let's look at the Amazon jungle. It has a cycle of the plants breathing in carbon dioxide and letting out oxygen. Now, it has been said that the Amazon jungle provides us with oxygen for the planet, which is totally incorrect. It does not. The amount of oxygen in our atmosphere is pretty much stable, and the Amazon jungle provides a little bit of conversion from CO2 back to oxygen, and it would balance, but let's take a place like where I grew up in, say, the cold northern states. In the wintertime, you look out the window, there's snow on the ground, all the trees, all the grass, everything is covered. There's no conversion of oxygen. Once you breathe in oxygen, you let out carbon dioxide. There's nothing out there in that environment that's converting CO2 back to oxygen. And we don't all die because of lack of oxygen in the wintertime. So the idea that the Amazon jungle is fueling our oxygen supply is absurd. It doesn't make any sense at all. You peel back the first onion layer and it's not there. But every teacher in the country will repeat it, sing song like a Mother Goose nursery rhyme. Totally incorrect science, fear-mongering, fear porn, bad science, teaching kids this. But the end result is that, so let's get back to the Amazon jungle and what's really going on there. Now, if you take away carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, then the Amazon jungle is not going to grow as good as it did before. So that's a problem. And this is the example I was giving at the beginning of the show where we're talking about negative feedback. Now, this you could consider this an amplification process where in comes CO2. That's the input into this Amazon jungle is your amplifier. And out comes oxygen, and that goes back into the atmosphere, and allegedly that allows all of us to breathe oxygen. But in that cycle, then what you need is more CO2, more carbon dioxide coming into the Amazon jungle. But what happens when the jungle starts creating oxygen and oxygen and is using up the carbon dioxide that's local? And no wind can get down there, no fresh air can get down there, down into the depths of the jungle. And so it just kind of stalls this process. Now, let's go back to the days of the dinosaur, just for a minute here. The level of carbon dioxide on planet Earth was vastly greater than what it is now. You could not take a herd of dinosaurs and put them in the Amazon jungle, they wouldn't last very long because they would eat everything up in no time. There's no place on planet Earth that would support a herd of dinosaurs, millions of dinosaurs like we had on planet Earth at one time. And the level of carbon dioxide was so high back then that the plant growth was just ostentatious. It was tremendous. And so that provided the dinosaurs and the whole climate was warmer because of the climate is controlled by the sun. And I think it really drives me crazy when people pick out a single thing like the greenhouse effect, which is bad science, and don't talk about the sun, which is the main contributor to all of our climate, long-term, short-term, etc. Weather is all controlled by the sun. If you took away the sun, I don't care what you do with your SUV or your greenhouse effect or whatever, nothing's going to happen. the Earth is going to shut down overnight. So anyway, back to the Amazon jungle. Imagine, you know, you have a day, you walk in, you measure the CO2 content in the Amazon jungle. The trees, the plants, all of the fauna and everything are converting this. And of course, plants do this at a much slower rate than the animals that take in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide, because you're breathing like that all day long and producing, you burn through a lot more air than a tree does, for example. So you might, you know, how many trees would it take to produce oxygen for a human? That's a good question. But the end result is that in the amplification process, even though the amplification may be one, amplification is, you could have a 2x amplification, a 3x amplification, or you could have a 1x amplification, or you could have a negative, a fractional amplification where the amplification is less than one. It's going down. It's a fraction. Okay, so at any rate, you're looking at the carbon dioxide content in the jungle, and as the plants breathe it in and breathe out oxygen, there's no more carbon dioxide for them to breathe. So this is an amplification process where the input, the carbon dioxide, is not getting to the plants. And so it's stagnating. Now, this happens in a pond. If you have a pond where all of a sudden there's vibrant plant growth, it actually chokes itself out and becomes stagnant because the CO2, which the plants need to grow on, even though they're in the water, they still are breathing that CO2 and giving off oxygen. They use up all the CO2 and they can't grow anymore, so it stagnates. And then it becomes putrefied and it becomes rotten. And so that's a situation that happens, say, late in the summer in some lakes or bogs in the northern climate, etc. And then winter comes, it all dies off, the lake clears out, the pond clears out, it freezes, all of the plant life dies and goes away, and then the next spring it starts all over again. Okay, so anyway, but in the Amazon jungle, which is a rainforest, you have the rain, you have the fertilization in the ground, etc. So all you need is to increase the supply of CO2. Now that's for somebody that's a non-scientist in the world of climate change, they would go, oh my goodness, you want to put more CO2 in the atmosphere. Well, yeah, that's right. And this is the concept of positive feedback. That if you cut down the supply of carbon dioxide, then the plants are not going to grow. The plants are going to be stunted. And then you're going to have less conversion of CO2 from into oxygen because the plants are stunted. And that is a negative feedback process that would cause the plants to eventually get smaller, weaker. And so this process of converting carbon dioxide back into oxygen is stunted because of negative feedback. You're cutting off the signal coming into the amplifier. And it's a very good example. It's a very good analogy. So how would you create plant life that would remove more CO2 from the atmosphere? You would provide more CO2. And the more CO2 you provide, the more abundant the plant growth will be. And just imagine you're a little teeny plant. Let's take a ground eye view of this whole process. You're in the Amazon jungle. You're a little teeny plant that's down on the jungle floor. And above you are vines and big trees and other plants that are shading the sunlight from you. But you have enough a light down there to just basically survive. And also, when you create oxygen, you're cutting off your own CO2 supply because you're converting oxygen, or I'm sorry, you're converting carbon dioxide into oxygen, and you don't. You're basically using up the carbon dioxide supply that's in your area. There's no wind down there to bring in new, vibrant carbon dioxide. And so the whole process just stalls. And so the jungle itself is a negative feedback process, the growth of the jungle. So now if you could take and contribute more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, you would grow this jungle into a much bigger jungle. And then all of a sudden you pull back and you say, okay, now we're going to stop artificially driving CO2 into the Amazon jungle and let it operate. But it's grown twice as big. The amount of foliage in the Amazon jungle has doubled because we used positive feedback. We drove more carbon dioxide into the jungle. Now it has twice the conversion capability that it had before. But if you take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, you're putting negative feedback, you're reducing the input into the process, and basically you're going to have less ability to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So this whole discussion is dealing with something called positive feedback. You use it in electronic circuits, but you have to control it. You can't just willy-nilly go out there and let positive feedback run. Like I said, if you took the output of an amplifier and fed it back into the input with nothing else, then the amplified signal would go into the input, you would amplify it again, and it would go back into the input, and pretty soon you would literally burn up your circuit because of over-amplification. So unbridled, uncontrolled positive feedback is not a good thing in any kind of system. But controlled positive feedback can get you up to a level, then all of a sudden you maintain at that level, and you have the ability, in the case of the Amazon jungle or a rainforest, you now have the ability to accentuate, to increase the amount of CO2 removal, if you see what I mean. So anyway, I'm going to stop with that. But so when people that are not scientists go about attacking a problem, it's the old, Tennessee Tuxedo. Is a friend of mine used to say talk about this, these cartoons when you were a kid. Tennessee Tuxedo was this guy, and I think it was like a dog or a rabbit or something, an animal. But he would start out at the beginning and he'd have some bright idea. And then he'd go about doing all of this stuff, and at the end it would come out all convoluted. And so anyway, that's how a lot of people go after climate change. They have something very, they have a very single thread and they don't understand what they're doing. And it ends up in the end all convoluted and counterintuitive, and whatever they're doing makes a bigger mess. Here's the point. It makes a bigger mess than when they started. Because what they don't understand the issue. So if you have a philosophy of removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere because you think it's going to cause global warming, then you're going to reduce the amount of plant life. It's going to hurt the ability of the Earth's natural process to remove carbon dioxide, and you're going to accentuate the problem. So what you need is positive feedback. You have to have a positive, you have to build up the Earth's ability to remove carbon dioxide. Now, when you get to methane, that creates another problem because plants don't breathe in methane. Methane is a gas that's created when plant life basically rots, and it creates methane. And if you've ever been around, like, say, in the spring of the year, and you have a big pile of leaves that's been there, it's been there all winter, it's soaking wet, and after a while the sun comes out and starts to decompose. And if you don't lift and move this pile of leaves or whatever it is that's decomposing, the methane starts to build up, and you can smell it. But anyway, methane is a different problem. What if all of a sudden the Earth warms up to the point where you have vast amounts like the Siberian tundra releasing large amounts of methane? And so this is something that Elon Musk was talking about also in his dialogue, talking with Peter Diamantis in starting this XPRIZE, was that there are other chemicals that are being released into the atmosphere that we may have to deal with also. So this is not just about greenhouse gases, and I really liked the way Musk started out. He said, just to begin with, to make it very clear, he is not an extremist. He's not a person who thinks we're all going to die in 2 years, you know, or whatever, you know. And also, the issue of people saying that there is no problem. Now, I'll be very clear. When I talk about this, I talk about the simple scientific issue that if you're talking about change in temperature, the Earth has tremendous ability to relieve itself of excess heat. And for people not to talk about the fact that energy is going into the atmosphere in tremendous amounts every day, 80% of the heat that's burned from coal, natural gas, whether it's geothermal, solar panels, 80% of the light that hits a solar panel goes off as heat. That's a heat engine. Sorry, buddy. You're creating 20% of that is going towards electricity, and in some cases, it's down to 16%, 15%. That other 85% of that heat is going up, or of solar energy is going up as heat directly into the atmosphere, and that's why birds die when they fly above solar panel installations, is because, you know, they're getting cooked. Hate to say it, but even the desert floor absorbs more heat than solar panels. It's like having a mirror there that just reflects all of this back up and heats that air above the solar panels, whereas the desert floor even absorbs that and it heats it up, but then it releases that energy at night. So anyway, but the Earth has tremendous, that's a good example also of the idea that the Earth can release this energy, because if you're in a desert, go to a desert location someday, and where it's very dry, there's no water in the atmosphere to hold the heat at night. And this is an issue of heat content, not of global or not of greenhouse effect. What happens is in a very dry area, the difference between a dry area and a normal moist area where there's water in the atmosphere, the big difference is that when the sun goes down, there's no moisture content in the air to hold the heat. So the air by itself, the dry air, the even though the temperature is there, it does not have heat content. And so that the what feels like very hot air really doesn't have a lot of heat energy in it, and that temperature drops very quickly because there's no heat content in the air. It's a question of heat content. That's a chemical or physical term. It's not just some random term I'm making up. Okay, so at any rate, the whole issue of global climate change based on carbon dioxide is... it's just simply a false narrative. It's not scientifically sound, because the Earth is able to release all of this heat over a long period of time. But in exactly what Musk was saying, I really admire him for walking down the center line here and talking about it the way it is, because right now he's talking about, 400 parts per million. And if it goes up to 1,000, in other words, more than doubles or nearly triples, then there are other issues, not just global climate change. You know, and the thing that drives me crazy, too, are people like politicians who have no scientific background. They get a talking point, and they're getting political points by creating fear in the public, whether it's COVID, whether it's climate change, whether it's we're going to run out of water tomorrow, we're all going to die, the sky is falling. You know, alarmism is not good. Alarmism or overpopulation. I really liked when Peter Diamantis talked to Elon Musk and talked about overpopulation, and they both came to the conclusion, which is true, that the Earth is losing population in the long term. The population growth in the United States is negative. It was 270 million and decreasing because there's a net You know, it's not what they call replacement. In other words, two people getting married, having kids, are having less than two kids in their lifetime. So that's not replacement. That means the population is going down, and that's what happens in developed countries. If you look at Europe, if you look at England or other developed countries, the populations are going down. It's in countries where the people are kept living in the dirt because of the banking, international banking community, the international banking and the CIA, who is the police force of the World Bank, etc., creating these tremendously dire situations in third world countries. And what happens? You have population explosion. You have 13-year-old girls becoming pregnant for the first time, and by the time they're 26 years old, they're grandmothers. This is, you know, this is in certain areas, there's uncontrolled population growth. But overall, in terms of the earth, yes, there's growing population. I mentioned this on John Moore's show when I was on a week ago, not yesterday, but a week ago. I said that, John, you know, you take the population of the earth and they're concentrated, 90% of them live in major cities. That means the 10% of that world population, less than a billion people, live out in the countryside, and most of them live in other sub-cities or smaller cities. And so, and John said, yeah, if you get on a freeway anywhere in mid-United States and drive west, you're not going to see anybody. You'll see some cars on the highway, but the land is empty. You have vast, vast amounts of area. Canada is primarily empty. Russia is primarily empty. China is, even though they have very high concentrations of people, there's a lot of empty ground out there. India is very highly populated all over. They have but if you look at the rest of Europe, Asia, etc., you know, most of the people live in cities, and the countryside is pretty much empty. So the world, you know, if you took away those population centers, which amount to maybe 1% of the world's area, where 95% of the people live and probably 1% of the world's land area, or maybe even less, maybe 0.5. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I've seen charts and graphs. So you look at New York City, you look at Miami-Dade, Puerto Rico, you look at the real high population density areas of the world, and you see those spikes in those locations, and then you look out the rest of the world, and then there's little teeny spikes around the minor cities, and then out beyond there, there's nothing. So there again, what my point is, that the people that are driving water shortage or population, overpopulation of the earth, you know, and this is all fear porn that politicians use to get elected and create fear in the public, and they're going to pass legislation and do all this stuff, and nothing really happens ever. I mean, it's all fear porn. That's what they live on. That's what politicians live on. Oh, let's create, let's stir up the, you know, a big hubbub when there isn't one, and then get elected and then pass legislation, and look at, they're really changing the world, and literally nothing is happening. You know, anyway, so the idea, I really was very glad, is what I'm saying, is that Elon Musk took a center of the road, and it, when this prize first came out, I thought, oh man, Elon Musk is going off the deep end here. He's going full tilt, climate change and everything else, and he wasn't. He came out of the chute saying that he's not, you know, we're all going to die in 10 years type of thing. But he made some very good scientific points about the need for the human race that's occupying this planet to extract certain unwanted things that can come into the air, and CO2 is not the only one. As I was saying, it could be methane. Methane could be a big one as the tundra of Russia up in Siberia starts thawing, and you find those, you know, they were finding a number of years ago, I reported on this show, that they were finding these big craters out in the middle of nowhere, out in the middle of Siberia. They're going, what's causing this? There's no animals, there's no ants, there's nothing here. And so what they figured out was these like big balloon type deposits of methane under the ground, and something was sparking them, probably a lightning bolt from a passing storm. Boom, because there's lightning. How many hundreds of thousands of lightning bolts hit the earth every day? So eventually you would figure that in a vast area like Siberia, that when the lightning bolts hit, and they hit one of those thawing deposits of methane that's under the ground, that kawamo, and that's what was going on. So you find these big craters out in the middle of Siberia, because this, and that tells you too now that that methane has been trapped there for thousands and thousands of years. Okay, because of the pole shift that went on. So, you know, science has to start understanding the real history of the world to make this, to understand what's going on in the world. But also, Musk was saying within the next 20 to 30 years, there's going to be a huge reduction of people in the world. There's going to be a culling of some kind. And I liked when he said, too, he said, if you think that the human race is just going to go on, and this was one of his points about SpaceX and becoming a multi-planet species, which makes sense. And if you go back to my show last week, I was talking about Baal in the populations on Mars. And so that can't be that far-fetched, because we're on the verge of going back to Mars. There's technical problems. There's issues with radiation that have to be overcome. Other things are going on. But we're on the verge of technologically being able to go to Mars and having a staging area on the moon, you know, under space travel. And I've always said, too, don't go land on a planet. Don't go land on the moon. Learn how to be autonomous in spacecraft first, that are just spinning around with artificial gravity, because landing on a planet or on the moon presents all kinds of other difficulties that you don't need. It presents all kinds of difficulties. And if you just stay up in an autonomous spacecraft, look at the space station. It's been up there for decades. Literally, Russia is going to build its own and send it up pretty soon. China wants to send one up. You know, maybe Japan will send one up. Maybe the European Space Agency will send a little one. You have private investors. The what's the guy's name? Bigelow. Bigelow is starting a space, a line of space hotels. Richard Branson is moving into that region where they want to have space tourism and a place to stay once you go up there. I'm moving into that area. I've presented my space hotel launch system that I presented on my webpage. It's still there, a little bit hidden, but you can find it there. But anyway, the point is that living in an autonomous space station is much, much easier than trying to land on a planet and deal with all the difficulties. And, you know, you have the day-night thing, where like on the moon, if you put a base there, you're going to be sometimes in bright sunlight and sometimes in complete darkness for long periods of time. We're talking about, you know, 15 days at a time in total darkness. Then all of a sudden you switch around and the sun hits you and bam, that's going to change overnight. So being on the moon, Mars has a rotational period of about the same as Earth, 24 hours. So it turns around, but Mars doesn't have an atmosphere. But it has enough atmosphere to cause a lot of problems, dust storms, etc. Okay, so getting back to my point, all of the dire predictions about overpopulation and everything, it's actually the exact opposite. The Earth is really very much underpopulated. The problem is the way we have built society based on this idea of massive agriculture and then bringing it all into the cities where the people don't produce anything. Literally, they don't produce anything usable in terms of the basics that you need in life, the food, the water, you know, etc. Everything has to be piped in there as services for these people or food. And, you know, it's not a natural way to live. But if you spread these people all over the world, you know, you could fill a state the size of Alaska with the majority of people in the world, and they would all have plenty of room. But that's not going to happen. And so the end result is, if you have worldwide catastrophes, or if they're going to pull something like the economic world collapse that's definitely coming. Believe me, it's coming. And I would, if I were you, I would get water filters. I would get all of the things that I provide to you. I would get those and store them up and get them ready, because when the economic collapse hits, you're going to want and need those things. And people with independent power, the wing generator with grow towers for growing your own food, etc., keeping your own seeds, growing your own food, vegetables, etc. That's why I sell that. You know, it's like these things. I don't sell flashlights. You can get by without a flashlight. You can't get by without green vegetables. You cannot get by without clean water. You cannot get by without a source of energy that provides you with the things you typically use on a daily basis. You could, but you better have 40 acres and a mule if you're going to live totally independent, because you're going to, that's the level of activity you're going to be at. But literally, the world is not overpopulated. You know, people like Bill Gates, oh, we got to get down to 400 million. No, if you get down to 400 million, you're talking, you know, a very close to extinction of the human population. Bill Gates is a complete moron idiot. He's some guy that should be in a mental institution with a belt around him, and him and his wife, Melinda, what a bat crazy, oof, you know, their view of the world is like, you know, talk about people that live in a sheltered, you know, totally removed community, and they think the world is overpopulated. Well, it's not overpopulated for anything they're doing. And the overpopulation is being caused by people just like Bill Gates that have vast wealth. If he gave some of his wealth, instead of trying to inject everybody with a needle for vaccines and some insane program, worldwide program, if he gave just some of his money to the poor people of the world directly, they would, you know, they would prosper, they would do better, and they would stop having so many babies. You know, anyway, it's a crazy world we live in. But yeah, understand that we do not live in a necessarily overpopulated world. All those people live in very small areas, and if there's an earthwide catastrophe of some kind, if there's some kind of a shutdown or a man-made shutdown, which is more likely than a naturally occurring shutdown that affects the whole world, then all of a sudden, the 95% of the world's population is going to be in dire trouble, because even though people may not live in major cities, they are very dependent on a system that supplies them with food and water and heat and all of the basic things they need. And cut those things off, and those people would not last 2 weeks. So we are on a, you know, a short, very short list, and I've talked about all of the natural disasters that could occur, you know, from volcanoes, etc. And when you hear Elon Musk talk, he reflects that too. I mean, he's very tuned to the conditions of the world, and so he's saying things that are just the opposite of what most people believe from the fear porn news that's pumping all of this ridiculous stuff. You know, like I gave commentary a few weeks ago about this film that came out. It's a Netflix film talking about the world water crisis. There is not a world water crisis. We have more water on this planet than anything else. Water is the most abundant molecule on the planet. And with a very small smidgen of water, we're doing just fine. I see that in Mexico City, they have a drought, and so they're delivering water by a mule pack. Well, yeah, but you have a city that's overpopulated. I mean, get a clue. You're going to have growing pains. You're going to have problems. You're going to have infrastructure problems, and water is going to be number one, numero uno. I used to live in Mexico City. I lived there and for quite a while, a couple of years, in fact. And so I know all about the city. That's before it doubled in size. When I was living there, it was only 10 million people, and it was crowded then, believe me. The people were all over the streets during the night and everything. But, you know, the Mexico City is a huge population center. Sure, you're going to have problems. And it's totally mismanaged. Talk about a place that's totally mismanaged. Good grief. Because, once again, you have flushing toilets in Mexico City. You're flushing most of your nice clean water down the toilet with a little bit of poop on it. I mean, talk about bad management. When all of that, if they had dry toilets there, they could take all of that composted human dry waste and put it out into the country as fertilizer. Because they do have a rainy season, and when it rains every day, I guarantee you, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the rain comes in, it rains every day during the rainy season. And that's when you could grow crops. And the Aztecs had a beautiful situation there that was a lake bed. In fact, from living in Mexico City, I lived up on one of the ridges of the volcanic caldera in which Mexico City sits. It's one of the biggest volcanic calderas on the planet. Mexico City sits in it. That's why they cannot grow. The population keeps growing within the bounds of that caldera. But when the Aztecs lived there, it was a big lake, and they had causeways that allowed them to move, etc. In fact, they moved around the causeways. They had little bridges, and they moved around like in little canoes, as was the major, and they grew food there. They had their food source there. They had fish in the water. It was a beautiful place. The Aztecs had it down until the Spanish showed up and killed them all. I mean, the history of the world, you just got to shake your head. You just have to shake your head because the Aztecs had a very nice, very eco-friendly system developed there where they lived there, and with a bountiful amount of food. And the emperor there lived like some of the richest emperors the world has ever seen. But anyway, I'm getting away from my main point here, that the world is, in a sense, teetering. But there's a lot of people right now. In fact, one of the benefits of COVID is a lot of people have just said, hey, I'm done with my city job. I'm done with being in the city. I'm done with my house in the city. And they're just leaving. They're buying a piece of property out in the country. They're going to grow some food, et cetera, and take the kids, educate the kids themselves. And the schools are failing. So there's no point in being in a city so that you can have good education for your kids, because it ain't there anymore. Even private schools have completely gone belly up bonkers and just inside out stupid with all of the, you know, they bought into the diversity and the inclusion and all of the other things, which are communist, basically a result of the Communist Manifesto, to take and stupefy your kids. People are just pulling their kids out of there. I saw a tremendous letter. It was read on Tucker Carlson Tonight. And the father had pulled his daughter out of this extremely high-end girls' school in New York City. And he said, you people have gone crazy. You people are insane with this, you know, wokeness. And he, you know, and everything is racist, and you got to... And his daughter was white, and they were teaching the girl she had to be embarrassed about her whiteness. And, you know, he said, no. he said, I'm pulling my kid out of here. I don't want my kid to be taught all of this stuff. And I'll tell you, I have lived around the world. I have taught in many different places, and in some places with a highly black population. And, you know, what I saw was a mixing of society where there weren't problems. They're creating problems where there are not problems. And, of course, there's always some issues, and there's some people that have problems with race. But it's not as prevalent as they're making this out to be at all. It's, you know, that's the 1% that they're trying to make out. And it's just like any of the other fear porn that's going on about the water crisis. The world is covered in water, and they're saying there's a water shortage. If they can convince you of that, then they can convince you of anything. If they can convince you that a little fat man that's got a sack over his shoulder represents Christmas, and then a little Easter bunny that lays colored eggs represents the primary holiday for Christian holiday of the year, of Easter, boy, they can convince you of anything. If you live on a water planet that's 3/4 of the surface of the Earth is covered with water, and there's more than ample water on the surface of the Earth for your use, and you're taking water and flushing it down a toilet every day, vast amounts of it, and you're going, there's a water shortage. Boy, do I have a bridge to sell you, buddy. It's just incredible. So anyway, I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but back to the idea, I started this with the idea of positive feedback, that you, by simply removing carbon dioxide, is not a good plan. It has to be done in a way that does not destroy the plant life that's here. And there are studies in which the people would grow plants on various amounts of carbon dioxide. In fact, greenhouse growers, typically, if it's a good commercial operation, they will pump large amounts of CO2 into the greenhouse so that the plants grow faster. It's an economic reality. This is reality. This is somebody who understands how plants grow. They put more CO2 into the greenhouse. Okay, and then they get, and you know what happens? You get more oxygen out of that. I mean, that's called positive feedback. That's, you know, and anybody that has half a brain can understand this, and that's what we're dealing with, is there's a lot of people running around in charge of things today that don't have half a brain. They don't even have a tenth of a brain. Okay, very good. Well, I'm getting close to the end of this show. Just want to remind you that I still have all my water filter products on sale, and the wing generator. Write in, tell me if you know somebody that on a farm or a ranch that needs excess power, that wants to get off the grid, or has a reliability issue where they think the power is going to go off. Refer them to my webpage so we can get them set up with a wing generator, so they can have that security of localized energy, or if it's a microgrid or a power grid or a local energy situation, we can also work with them. A lot going on in the world today, but I like to be positive too, talking about positive feedback. If I put positive information into the world, then that will result in other positive things happening. So in spite of all of the, I would say the biggest problem in the world today is there's a lot of idiots running everything. That's the biggest problem in the world. And a lot of greedy people, and a lot of people with insane ideas, like the bankers and their CIA and their minions in the government. Those are the biggest problems in the world today, not the things they're telling you. This is Jim McCanney. Remember my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.